You're listening to Irish Radio Candidate Home and Abroad at Your Roots Are Showing, and I'm delighted to be sitting across from Enda Scal. And Enda has a new album that has just been launched, The Dark Well. Enda Thafaltero, good meal mahagat.
Good to see you, Austin.
And thanks for taking a few minutes. The Dark Well, when did it hit the shelves?
It came out at the end of last summer.
Okay.
And we just won Irish Times Trad Album of the Year.
Fantastic.
Which came as a huge surprise. It's a lot harder now to get press coverage for anything that's not like outrageously outrageous.
Okay.
You know.
Which flies in the face of trad, the word itself.
Yeah. Now, this album is called The Dark Well because it's weird. It's banjo and harmonica.
Okay. So
we have an American double bass player who lives in Tokyo.
Okay.
We have an Italian percussionist who I said I wanted to sound weird and Middle Eastern. So we have tambocks, two-handed drums, and frame drums, and all sorts of stuff.
Okay.
And tambourine. There's Natalie McMaster's daughter, Mary Frances, is dancing on it.
Okay.
That's an amazing track. She's incredible. So I had the title banging around in my head for a long time because in Ireland at the moment there's this kind of series that they run through the Irish Traditional Music Archive and the National Concert Hall. It's called Drawing from the Well.
Yes.
And it's this idea of like traditional music is water from an ancient well. And I was like, well, I'm a banjo player.
Yep.
And Joel is a harmonica player, so we're not allowed in the well.
Yeah.
So we have to go and make our own well.
Okay.
And it's way more fun.
Right.
So that was the idea. We'll call it The Dark Well.
And then the tracks that are on it, where are you drawing from the well for those?
So it's all traditional music.
Yeah.
Mostly Irish, a little bit of American old time and bluegrass because I love that.
Okay.
But what we've done, for example, the gravel walk set, we've taken the gravel walks, but we've left out the last part because we don't like it.
That's the potholes.
Yeah. And we do the Rakes of Clonmel, but we also figured we don't like the last part either. So we kind of deconstructed really traditional tunes and put them back together in the wrong key, most of them, and played in an unusual way.
So when you say in the wrong key, I know a lot of traditional music is in the key of D, is it?
Yeah. Because of the harmonica, we were able to go to B flat and C sharp and like so strange, unusual keys that you wouldn't normally play in.
Okay, so what difference does that make? As somebody whose ear wouldn't be adequately trained, I know that if I want to play something in my amateur ability, I can transpose it into G or D or C that I'm able to cope with.
Yeah.
But if it's transposed into something like B flat, what difference is it going to make?
Not a whit.
Okay.
Except if you're listening to this album, you'll go, oh, I know O'Neill's March, but it sounds different. And, and it does, because it's played on an octave lower harmonica that's really throaty and really breathy.
Okay.
And then I'm doing like triple string banjo tremolo all the way through it.
Okay.
So it sounds completely different to any other version you've ever heard.
Okay.
And then throw in some tambourine and Middle Eastern drums on it, and it's a whole experience.
So it's very unconventional, untraditional. So how long have you been under this you guys operating together to put this together?
We literally met 1 year ago for the very first time. Joel came to my house in Galway. We played for 9 hours. We played for 8 hours the next day, and then we recorded the entire album in a day and a half.
That's fantastic. fantastic. And do you have your recording set up at home? Were you able to do it there, or do you have to go to
the studio? No, I mean, I do, but no. I record loads of banjo videos, right? That's my whole thing. I've IrishBanjoLessons.com, and I've thousands. So I'm able to do that in my own time, because I can mess it up as much as I like and then edit it out. But if you're doing something critical like a performance, like an album, you don't want to be pressing the buttons as well.
Okay.
You need somebody that looks after all of that so you can focus on playing as well as you possibly can. So it's a different system.
You need a competent sound guy that you can trust.
Absolutely, yeah. We went to a guy in Galway who has done like all of Sharon Shannon's albums
and
stuff like that.
Okay.
Really, really good.
Okay. I know you were a musical family and musical background. When were you first introduced to music?
So I grew up in rural Galway.
Which part? You're down near Canberra, is it?
Near Tuam, like, so East Galway.
Okay.
Yeah, so a little village called Currafin.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
So not Currafin in County Clare.
Yeah, I know Currafin in County Clare.
Yeah, if you're into Gaelic football, like Currafin, well, and loads of all Ireland,
it's a long time gone.
Big club.
Because I'm originally from the Slough.
Ah, well, you know Currafin then.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm a long time gone.
Yeah.
And there's music all around that neck of the woods.
No. That's the funny thing. So this wasn't a case of like, oh, we grew up and there was all the local musicians and there was the hierarchy of, there was none of that.
Right.
The only person that played music in our village was, funnily enough, a harmonica player called Jack Rabbit. That was his real name.
Right. Yeah, no, there's lots of rabbits in County Galway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I was the only musician.
Right.
So it wasn't the case. So we were the first family in that locality to play Irish music. Went to school. And on the very first day of school, we all got a tin whistle. Now
you're talking national school.
I'm talking national school, so I'm talking like 4 years of age.
Yeah.
Everyone's handed a tin whistle, and so we're all blown nuts. And we had a great music teacher then that came in when we were a little bit older.
Yeah.
Called Septa Byrne, who's from East Galway as well, down near Ballymac Ward.
You
know that neighbourhood.
I know Ballymac. Yeah.
So she came in. She was a very inspiring lady. You know, and so much of this story is how things happen.
Yes.
It's one person
that
builds a community around them.
Yes.
Almost always.
Yes.
You know. So my dad started Cultus in Currafin.
Okay.
And it grew into one of the biggest Cultus branches in the country.
Right.
And it went on a huge arc up. And when all the teachers left the national school, they all retired, the new teachers that were coming in had no interest in Irish music.
Right.
So they just stopped teaching tin whistle.
Right.
And then the Cultus just petered away and disappeared.
Oh.
And it's only been restarted now, like 20 years later, after it fell away and died.
Right.
You know, so these things go through cycles, but it comes down to having one or two people that will drive it forward.
Very much so, because I know I was talking to somebody else, and that one of the things they were saying Ireland lacks is a music program in the schools. And like, I was trying to think back, and I don't ever remember in infants and national school an instrument being produced or talked about, and it was only when I was in Garbley that we had the operettas and the musicals. But even then it was stage rather than play.
Yeah. I think music generation has gone some way to addressing that.
Right.
You know, that's that system that U2 set up.
Right.
Where I think they put €1 million seed money in it, and then it was backed by the government. So there's a lot of music generation organisations that popped up all around the country, and they provide affordable music lessons with really good teachers.
Okay.
And in all instruments. Now, they're very broad. Like, the trad one, obviously, has done really, really well, but you also do rock guitar and drums and all sorts of stuff.
Well, it doesn't matter. If someone falls in love with one instrument, they'll migrate to whatever else at some stage in the future, or they'll have the platform, the foundation to grow.
Yeah. But it so much of it comes down to it being a culture in a locality.
Yeah.
And it just happened to grow in Currafin for a period of time.
Right.
Then die off, and now it's coming back. And there was nothing there before.
Right.
You know. So it comes down to individuals. But there's nothing in... I don't know. How would you do that? You couldn't hire a national school teacher in Ireland unless they were able to play music then, because... If you were to put a national program of music into
place. Other than that, there would be one teacher, and that's no different that there's someone doing civics or someone is in doing something else, that they've studied music and that's part of their curriculum.
But there needs to be like it has to be like a travelator. It's all fine and well to give the 4-year-old a tin whistle, but you need somebody competent and motivated to take them on to the next level.
Correct. Yeah.
And maintaining kids' interest in music is probably the hardest thing, because there's so much else going on now.
Yeah, I know my brother-in-law is involved with a group down in County Waterford near Dungarvan, Coolness Mayor, and they have a fantastic seed program, and they have had for years. And a lot of that is outside of school hours.
Yeah. And we were lucky because we got into Cultus, which meant that we were doing the competitions.
Yeah.
And then we had parents that were interested enough that we would stay on and play in the sessions.
Yeah.
You know, so not a lot of parents do that. A lot of parents are like, do the competition, get the hell out of there and go home.
Yeah.
We also had that lady, Septa Byrne, who was our music teacher. And when I was 11, she started a show in Galway City, and we started playing for tourists.
Okay.
So that grew into a really big thing where busloads of them turning up.
Yeah.
We would play for them 7 nights a week.
Yeah.
So that got us all on stage and got us all performing, and we started to understand the mindset of playing music for an audience is very different to playing music in a session.
Yeah.
And here we all are, you know, years later, in some various guises as full-time musicians. You know?
As a full-time musician, you've had to diversify. And when I say diversify, I mean, like, you can't just rely purely on performance. You can't just rely purely on streaming. So you teach also, and that gives you... But you're able to devote... or derive 100% of your livelihood effectively from music.
Yes. So I was lucky because We Banjo 3 was very successful. And so I was able to be a full-time musician with We Banjo 3 and do nothing else. Now, when I say do nothing else, everyone is like, oh, it must be lovely to just come home and you're off for 3 months.
Yeah.
I consider touring a holiday from the work.
Okay.
Right? There's all the unseen work that nobody wants to do, nobody appreciates. Like I've always said, I've talked at panels here at this conference over the years and said that we would come home from a 6 week tour, and I would write a postcard with a picture of Galway on it and handwrite it and address it to every single venue that we played and thank them for having the band.
Right, right.
And they always remembered, and they say nobody does this.
That's right.
Right. That's colossal work. Who wants to do that?
I know.
I wanted to do it, but it was really important.
And I guess, and you know, that is one of the differences when you're really trying to break in. You have to define yourself differently.
Yeah.
And in that environment as well, that there's such rich talent comes out of Ireland, particularly that goes internationally, you also have to define yourself in that market.
Yeah. Now I'm like very diverse in a sense. When I knew We Banjo 3 was finishing up around 2022, I started creating banjo lessons online and I started a Patreon.
Okay.
And it was just kind of like, you know, I'll do this, you know, as on a small scale, and it'll be a little bit of, you know, what they call passive income, although there is no such thing as passive income. Anyone who says passive income doesn't have it and thinks everybody else has it, unless you're retired, but then you've worked hard for it. But that has now grown massively, where I have my own website. So I built IrishBanjoLessons.com last year.
Right.
And between that and Patreon, I have 800 banjo students.
Wow.
All around the world.
Yeah.
And so what I do full-time now is I make video lessons for them.
Right.
But I go into huge depth.
Yeah.
So I'll take one tune, but I make 10 individual lessons for the tune.
Okay.
So it covers everything from the absolute beginner who's trying to figure out where the D string is to, like, I have a couple of All-Ireland champions on my site. And I'll make highly involved, ornamented, difficult versions of the same tune. So there's a graduated path,
okay,
and it covers every aspect, every level of ability, from beginner right up to kind of almost like expert level.
Right.
And I think I have 3,000 videos on the site now, 800 students, and building. You know, I'm adding more stuff all the time.
There was one night I was meant to talk to you guys in Galway, and you were at. Leisureland.
Oh, yeah.
And timing was ended up wrong. And
yeah, we had a bus tour. We had 100 Americans on tour with us.
No, this is back a number of years ago. And I connected with one of you guys, and by the time you came in the door, you were about to be on stage a short time.
That sounds about right.
There was no time.
Was that 22 or 2019?
No, it'd be 19. It was before COVID. That was
2019.
It could have been. It was way back, relatively speaking.
No, we were on a bus tour that time as well.
All right.
We had one bus that time, 2019.
Right.
So we had like 50 Americans.
Right.
In the front 10 rows. Going mad. In the whole house and legend.
Yes,
something like that.
That was some night.
Yep.
And COVID then, of course, as you say, COVID caused everyone in the gig industry to have to reinvent themselves one way or another, or in some cases, cease to exist.
Yeah. It in hindsight, it brought a huge amount of opportunities.
Yeah.
Because it created an online space that maybe people weren't aware it existed for teaching and for communicating with your audience and engaging with them on many, many platforms.
So you're saying that there's a change that you'd see now?
I mean, it's only observationally, but I would feel that the algorithms online have changed enormously. So there's very little traction on Facebook and Instagram for posting.
Okay.
And people really want to feel like you're engaging with them personally.
Yeah.
So the face-to-face stuff is very important. So I do a monthly Zoom class where, you know, everybody's invited.
Yeah.
I'll have special guests on talking about their own banjo playing and stuff like that. And that's very, very important. I send like loads of newsletters out all of the time, so I'm constantly engaged with the community,
right,
talking, you know. So I'll do, when I go on tour, I'll be putting up posts of everything. You have to work really hard to engage with the audience, because they're bombarded with information now, like non-stop on so many different platforms.
I've only noticed, I've started doing it in the last month, is putting up reels.
Mm-hmm.
Because I use Facebook and Instagram, and I began off them, if I shouldn't say that out loud, I began off them if I could, but I can't. But I started putting up a few reels, not for, and I should be doing it to promote this,
mm-hmm.
but what I did, like, I put a reel up now here last night or the night before, and I put, and I get more traction on one reel.
Oh yeah.
Which has caused me also to figure out how do I migrate.
Yeah. You see, Instagram are having to compete with TikTok.
Yeah.
And TikTok is the really hot platform at the moment. It's
right.
Where everybody is.
Right.
It's short form video, very, very inventive, very innovative. Instagram was all about pictures and photos,
yeah.
And they realized that they were losing market to TikTok. So they prioritized short form reels.
So you have to use the short form reel, mm-hmm. to effectively divert traffic or direct traffic to somewhere where you can turn it into long form.
It's a case of being on everything.
Okay.
So you have to be on TikTok, you have to be on Instagram, you have to be on Facebook. YouTube is a different system. YouTube will prioritize long form video.
Okay.
And people will engage with it for a long time. So
right.
If you have a good video, like podcasts do really well, anything that has plenty of talking and explaining. Like
yeah.
I did one recently with Clarine Banjos, where we just go through the whole setup, and you know, if you had a banjo and you wanted to fix it, clean it,
yeah,
set
yeah.
it up.
Yeah, yeah.
Loads of traction on that.
Right.
It's interesting. So people can put that on, cook dinner,
yeah.
go for a walk, bring,
yeah.
you know, throw it in the back pocket, they're getting the information.
Yeah.
Whereas if they're sitting and scrolling, then right. you've
yeah.
got 3 seconds to grab
yeah.
their attention, and
yeah.
that's a whole different
yeah.
different ball game.
Yeah.
So, again, the argument is that if you put up one video and you're like, how come I didn't get 10 subscriptions?
Yeah.
You've got to put up 1,000.
Right.
And
right.
hope that you get enough bandwidth.
Right.
That people yeah. will get your message.
Yeah.
But it's way harder. So I launched my first banjo tutorial book in 2006.
Okay.
And before I even had got it to the house, I put a post on thesession.org, which
yeah.
is a...
I don't know, I know it's still up there,
oh, yeah.
But,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't know, is it still being
oh, yeah.
used that much?
Oh, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, very popular. I put a post on that, and I put a post on Banjo Hangout.
Okay.
And the email started to land in. Like, I sold, I'm going to say, 200 copies of the first 1,000 before I'd even got them to the house.
Wow.
I was overwhelmed with orders.
Yeah.
I put out a course last week, 80 tunes, like brilliant tunes from myself, Elaine Riley, who's an amazing banjo player, Aidamar O'Connor, who was 121 All-Ireland's 23, and another girl, Karen Dolan. So it's basically 80 perfectly curated tunes for kids who want to play in banjo competitions.
Okay.
It's a brilliant course. It's $99. It's cheaper than coming for 2 banjo lessons.
Yeah.
And we've sold 25.
Right.
And I have banged the drum online about the course.
Yeah.
But now everyone has to see everything like 15 times before they take action.
Yeah.
It used to be 7,
yeah.
and go back to 2006, all I had to do was tell them once.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. So you're doing a bit of touring.
Too much.
Right.
Too much coming up. I've accidentally, like, I went from We Banjo 3, finished early 2023. I came home. I was very upset about it because I didn't want it to stop. My wife said, please don't start a band for a year.
Right.
And she meant 2. And after a year, I had become totally fine with not being in a band.
Yeah.
You know, part of me was like, oh, well, will I disappear off the scene, right? Because
yeah,
that's
yeah.
part of it.
Yeah.
And I was happy. But then this Italian band, because their banjo player was on my Patreon, he sent me a message and he said, do you want to come as a special guest for a summer tour in the States? And I was like, yeah, why not? I'd also made a decision to say yes to whatever showed up in life.
Okay.
Whatever it was,
yeah.
I would say yes, based on the assumption that everything was for my benefit.
Right.
Right. My wife recently asked me to stop saying yes. Too much stuff showed up.
So next thing she said, I never do the dishes, you said no.
So what? You said I'm not to say yes.
Right, so in the last 18 months, I've been in Gada and we've done two American tours,
yeah.
Summer festivals. I said yes to Natalie McMaster, so I'm going on tour. I'm going on tour with Gada next week for a month. I'm home for 10 days. Then I go back out on tour with Natalie McMaster and Danelle Leahy for a month.
And that's in Canada, is it?
That's America.
Okay.
Big tour. Right. Big tour. The Celtic All-Stars. Ross Ainslie, Karen Matheson. Like, and I have so much music to learn.
Right.
A little bit freaked out. I've presented, it's not out yet, it's coming out soon. I was asked to present a 4-part TV show for TG Carr about bluegrass in Ireland in Irish.
Yeah.
I said yes and then went, I don't talk Irish. And she said, don't worry, we'll figure that bit out.
Yeah.
So I presented, and my first recording was in Westport at the Westport Bluegrass Festival. I was up there for 4 days and they said, we're going to start with the finale. I thought I was going to get eased into it. So the very first time they pressed record on the camera, I'm on stage with three American bands. I walk out from the back of the stage and I go, something, something, something in Irish. I have the whole piece learned off. And then I play a set with the band, including dancing and singing and the whole lot. We had to do it three times.
Right.
And there's 40 people in the audience.
Right.
So that was a baptism of fire. So I did that. I did a TV show with Rhiannon Giddens for PBS. It's on Amazon Prime, called My Music with Rhiannon Giddens. I did the album with Yoel. It's been a crazy 18 months. Yeah.
Any sign that you're coming to Canada?
There's nothing yet. I was hoping for Celtic Connections, Colours this year, but it's their 25th or 40th.
40th.
Yeah. So when I talked to Wendy, she said, well, we're focusing on bands that have been here in the past.
All right.
And I said, I've played it 4 times, so surely I count.
No, sorry. Doesn't count.
I think it was like, you're not Canadian.
Right.
So that's an amazing shop window.
Yeah.
Like, one of the most impactful things that we Banjo 3 ever did was to play Celtic Colours twice.
And, you know, the sad thing for me is Celtic Colours is our Thanksgiving weekend.
Okay.
And it's always, we as a family always get together, and it's one of the ones I'd love to go to. And
magic.
I know. But it's on the wrong period of time.
Yeah. You make fans for life.
Yeah.
In Celtic Colours.
Yeah.
We've done that. We've played Winnipeg. We've played Calgary. We never got to play Edmonton. It was there for us for about 3 years in a row.
You played Almond once, did you?
I don't know.
Outside Ottawa?
No.
No.
No. We played Natalie McMaster's festival, Greenfields.
Because you had Cindy Wood doing work for you.
Yeah.
And I thought Cindy brought you to Almond.
No.
Okay.
No. Okay. No, I haven't done that. No, Calgary, Winnipeg, Natalie's festival, and Celtic Colours. And we were to do Edmonton.
Right.
And then the band finished before we got to get there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And we're going to share a piece of music. Which track?
My favourite track on this is probably The Gravel Walks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this guy has been fantastic sitting and chatting.
Lovely to talk to you, Austin.
And hopefully we will see you in Canada. Sooner rather than later.
You have loads of editing to do. You didn't realise what a chatterbox I am.
No, that's perfect. Thank you.